Hi, folks. Bob Main here with the Handgun World podcast. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thank you very much for tuning in. This is episode 4 of the Handgun World podcast. And I got quite a few emails last time I posted a show about expanding some more on concealed carry. Things like where to carry, how to carry, what position of the body to carry in, what type of holster, what type of belt, things like that. So that's going to be one of the main topics. This is going to be kind of a short show, but I'm also going to address a few other thoughts and ideas that I have on the subject of concealed carry. And then we're going to talk a little bit about 22 pistols, because those are becoming more and more popular with the price of ammo going so high. So, again, thanks for tuning in to the Handgun World podcast. Haven't had a chance to start the forum yet. I am going to do that, though. I'm going to try to get that done within the next week here and set up a forum so we can talk guns. Hey, by the way, I'm also going to talk a little bit about shotguns. Somebody has sent me a request to talk about shotguns over from the Survival Forum. And by the way, I do have a Survival podcast, and that's called Today's Survival Show. Today's Survival Show. The website is www.todayssurvival.com. We talk about a lot of self-sufficiency, secure living, preparedness, being a prepper type stuff over there. So if you're interested in that and becoming a little bit more secure, and go over there and check out Today's Survival Show. I think you'll find that quite interesting as well. But let's dive right into the concealed carry discussion. First of all, I'm glad to see so much popularity in concealed carry. There are states that are getting just absolutely flooded with applications for concealed carry, and it's really a good thing. My humble opinion on that subject is that the more people that we can get to get a concealed carry license, the harder it's going to be for the pinheads in our government to take that right away. The more people you have that do something or own something, there's power in numbers. So it's great. I think we've got 46 or 47 states now that offer concealed carry licenses, and that's great. Let's just keep it up. The main thing is we need to encourage people to get some good training and do things the right way after they concealed carry, because there's nothing more dangerous than a person that has a right to carry a gun, carries it, and then doesn't know what the heck they're doing. So with that said, let's talk about the difference between carrying concealed and carrying covert. Big difference between carrying concealed and carrying covert. By the letter of the law, carrying concealed technically means that a reasonable person taking a look at you can't tell that you're carrying a gun. That's pretty much what concealed means. So that's pretty broad description there, and that pretty much leaves the possibilities open to a lot. Now, you know, if you look at somebody and you can't tell they're carrying a gun, that's one thing. But, you know, picture this. You know, picture some commando-type person that's wearing one of these 5.11 tactical vests or a photojournalist vest or some kind of a vest that's pretty obvious that it's tactical in nature, and, you know, we've got some combat boots on, and they're wearing fatigues and stuff like that, and they're wearing a baseball cap that says Glock Shooting Sports or Kimber and something like that. What does that tell you? Okay, it screams, gun! I got a gun! Okay, but it's concealed. It is concealed. That would not be in violation of any law of carrying a concealed weapon, because I can't be sure the person's carrying a gun, but boy, by the way they're dressed, I'm telling you what, I think they're carrying a gun. In my humble opinion, that's a bad thing, because the last thing you want to do is telegraph that you're carrying a gun. The last thing you want to do is tell the bad guy that you are carrying a gun. One of the big advantages that a criminal has is the element of surprise. And if you can do as much as you can to neutralize that element of surprise with some surprise of your own, you're going to be in better shape. If you can say, hey, look here, dirtbag, check out the other end of my 45. Bet you didn't know I had this. You see, that's what's called carrying covert. And I'm going to explain more here in a minute, but all your tactical clothing and stuff, fine and dandy when you're going to the range. It's good stuff to practice with. If you're going to the shooting range, you're going to take a good training class, that's fine. But leave it in the closet when you're actually concealed carrying. Now, I just mentioned something about training classes. Yeah, folks, it's my opinion that the training you get when you take your concealed carry license is not enough. Not enough. Not nearly enough. I live in Texas. I would say that the shooting requirements to get your concealed carry license in Texas is about medium. It's certainly not much, but I think it's more than they require in a lot of other states. But just, it does not mean that you're proficient with a firearm. You know, to stand there and stand still in one spot and slowly shoot, you know, rounds at a target and hit a man-sized target, stuff like that, you got to be better than that. I want you to consider this. If you are in an actual altercation, a gunfight, you have to defend yourself with your firearm. You're only going to be half as good as you are at the range. If that, maybe even only a third as good as you are at the range. So if you got a nice fancy $1,500 1911 that can shoot an inch and a half groups at 25 yards, fine and dandy. That's great. Congratulations. I wish I owned a gun like that. That's awesome. Those inch and a half groups at 25 yards are probably going to be 6-inch groups. And you're going to be under stress. You're going to be moving. Your target is going to be moving. You really think someone's going to stand there and allow you to shoot them once they find out that you have a firearm to defend yourself? And are you going to want to stand there? So think about it. You know, you're going to be taking cover. Can you shoot from cover? Can you shoot around cover? Over cover? Try shooting a moving target. It's a lot harder. It's 10 times harder than shooting something still. So under stress, all kinds of crazy things happen, and fear sets in. Your heart rate goes up. Your adrenaline starts pumping. You know, when you're in fear, a couple of chemicals go off in your brain. One of them is adrenaline. You've heard that. The other is cortisol. And, you know, What that does is it decreases your fine motor skills. Your fine motor skills are shot. That's why in training they teach things like not to use the slide release lever to release the slide. If you have to reload and you want to release your slide and let your gun go back into battery, don't use the slide stop lever. Use the slingshot method. Why? Well, because getting your thumb on that slide stop lever is a fine motor skill, and folks, that's going to be shot. You're going to forget to do that, or you're going to be fumbling with it. You fumble for a second, that could cost you your life. Just one second of fumbling around trying to depress some kind of control on your gun, that could cost you your life. Use the slingshot method. Ram that magazine home, make sure it's seated properly, yank back on the back of that slide and let it slingshot forward all the way into the forward position. That's a gross motor skill. That's going to be a lot easier to do under stress. Another thing that happens is we get a death grip on that gun. When you're scared, when you're in a fight and you're frightened, you're going to have a death grip on that gun. You're going to be squeezing that gun as hard as you possibly can. Now, I know it's hard not to do that, but that's probably what's going to be happening. Okay, the best way to get over fear is to be prepared. Be prepared. Okay, always have your situational awareness antenna raised up as high as you possibly can. Hard to do, and you are going to get caught off guard. You're going to have a death grip on that gun, and it's really a lot harder to pull the trigger when you're squeezing that grip as hard as you possibly can. So practice relaxing your grip. Your weak hand. If you're a right-handed person, your weak hand is your left hand. Your weak hand should be applying more pressure to the pistol than your strong hand. Like about 60-40, 65-35. More pressure with your weak hand than with your strong hand. I want you to try this. I want you to make a fist right now while you're listening to this. If you have to hit pause for a couple seconds. But make a fist and clench your fist as hard as you can. Just really clench that fist as hard as you can, okay? Now, extend your index finger out like you're going to pull the trigger of a gun. Keeping your fist clenched as hard as you can, extend your index finger out. And how hard is that? How hard is that to put your index finger out with your fist clenched as hard as you possibly can? Now relax your fist. Open your fist up a little bit. Open it up a couple of inches. And now, see how much easier it is with your index finger to pull the trigger? Well, that's kind of the same concept pretty much with a gun, so think about that. All right, so back on to conceal carry. Get the training, folks. Take training classes like from Tactical Response, Suarez International, Front Sight. I'm going to put links in the show notes underneath the podcast posting for all three of those training companies, because they're all excellent. And Suarez International has a lot of really good courses all over the country as well. Glenn Matthews, an instructor with Suarez International, taught me a lot in a two-day pistol class, more than I learned in 2 years before that. Conceal carry. How to do it and where to do it. Well, these are my thoughts, folks, so let me give you my opinion. I'm a big believer in two types of carry. Inside the waistband, on your belt, and pocket carry. And those are the only two types, the only two methods I use. And it's really the only two methods that I would suggest, and I'm going to explain myself in a minute. Let's start with belt carry. If you're new to concealed carry and learning to defend yourself with a weapon, I would suggest that you would belt carry first. And there's a couple specific reasons for that. Now let me talk about my recommended setup when you're belt carrying. Inside the waistband, most as often as you possibly can. Some of you might say, well, it's not very comfortable. Well, it will get more comfortable the more you do it. And I'm going to talk right now about ways to make inside the waistband more comfortable. Okay? Let's talk about your holster. My personal preference, and I've tried a lot of holsters. I have a whole lot of holsters in a shoebox that I'm not using anymore except for one. There's one holster that I use about 95% of the time when I belt carry. It's the it's made by High Noon Holsters. High Noon Holsters. And their website address is www.highnoonholsters.com. It's called the Mr. Softy. All right, the reason I like the Mr. Softy, get your mind out of the gutter. I know what some of you thought when I said Mr. Softy. All right, it's a holster I'm talking about, folks. It's real soft leather. That's why they call it that. It's very, very soft leather. The nice thing about the High Noon Mr. Softy is that when I don't have the gun in the holster and I want to keep my holster on, I don't even notice it's there. It collapses very well, and it's like there's nothing there. Plus, it's probably the closest thing to wearing no holster at all. I mean, here's the positive side of it. It conceals well. It holds the pistol up against your body real well. It has a real strong metal clip. It's got a very well-built metal clip. The leather is very well built. The stitching is very well built. It's about a $30 holster, $35, I think. When I bought mine, I think it was like $28.95 or something like that. They may have gone up a little bit, but not much. Now, High Noon, if you want to spend more and get a higher quality holster that, you know, has a few more bells and whistles to it, you'll see their selection. They're good people to do business with. They're very fair. They got a real good return policy. I carry my Glock 19 in a High Noon holster quite often. And it conceals it well, and it holds it up because of that good strong metal clip. That's one reason why it holds it up close to the body. The closer to your body your weapon is, the more concealable it's going to be. And we're going to talk about covert carrying in a minute. But holding it up close to your body is important. Now, the belt. Let's talk about the belt. The belt is so often overlooked, and it's probably one of the most important parts of concealed carry. I prefer what's called a kydex-lined leather belt. Kydex-lined leather belt means the middle of it, inside the belt, it's kydex. It's very stiff and strong kydex. On the outside of the belt, it's leather. And so it looks like a good leather dress belt. My width, I think it's an inch and a quarter. Yeah, it's an inch and a quarter. It's an inch and a quarter width, kydex-lined leather belt. Some people like inch and a half. It's okay. But the combination of that kydex-lined leather belt and that Mr. Softy holster with the good strong metal clip does the job very well. I would also suggest guys, relaxed fit jeans, relaxed fit cargo shorts. Doesn't hurt to get them one size larger, okay, but the relaxed fit are definitely a whole lot better. Plus, if you get into an altercation, you got more room to move around in that anyway. But that's a real good setup, and one of my favorite carry pistols is a Glock 19, And, you know, it's a medium-sized pistol with a pretty good-sized grip on it, and I can hide it pretty well. I can hide it pretty well under a Hawaiian shirt or a real loose-fitting T-shirt. No problem. Now, let's talk about where on your body to belt carry. Again, inside the waistband, my opinion, the only way to go. If for some of you who are new, let me explain this in simple terms. If you think about the front of your stomach, that's the 12 o'clock position, and the smaller your back is the 6 o'clock position. Okay, 12 in the front, 6 in the back. I carry at about 2 o'clock, and it's also better known as AIWB. I carry in the AIWB position. AIWB stands for appendix inside the waistband. Is because that gun sits pretty much right in front of my appendix. Okay, on the right side. I'm a righty. So, AIWB works real good. And let me tell you why I like to carry that way. And I learned this at Suarez International when I took their course. It gives you the fastest draw of anywhere on your body. You can get to that, and if it's in the front of your body, a little bit to the right, you can draw that. You can get to your weapon faster than you can over on your side, behind the hip, or smaller your back. Now, I know there might be some quick draw McGraws listening to this program. You know, you might be the fastest draw in the West, right? And you can carry that thing from behind your hip, and you can pull it out in less than a second. Okay, good. If you've practiced it that way, then carry it that way. If you're new and you're getting into this, try AIWB, appendix inside the waistband. It's the quickest deployment of a pistol. It's the part of your body that gives you the quickest deployment. If you've eaten too many tacos lately or too many donuts and you can't carry there on the just to the right side of your stomach, well, then go ahead and put it behind your hip and learn to draw fast from back there. But that's where you're going to find most of the time. If I'm belt carrying, that's where I'm carrying. Okay, so hopefully that gives you some pretty good ideas on that. Hawaiian shirts, as I mentioned, are great. Or those untucked, for guys, you know, those untucked shirts with the straight tails. Those are fantastic. I'm glad that they were back in style. I'm glad that untucked shirts are back in style because, boy, you can hide so many good things underneath those. And it hides even full-size pistols very well. Let's talk a little bit about pocket carrying. I often pocket carry. If you have the budget and you can get another pistol, I would suggest you get a pocket pistol. If you don't have the budget, save up for it. Don't use credit. Don't break the bank. You know, be a survivalist too, and you know, save up until you can pay cash. But my pocket carry pistol is a Car Arms P380. Car Arms P380. Car P380. If you look it up on the internet, Car is spelled K-A-H-R. They're kind of rare, but they're becoming a little bit more popular. High quality, and it weighs like about 9 ounces unloaded. That's it. 9 ounces. Load that thing up. It's 6 plus 1 of 380 round, 380 caliber, and I think maybe it might be at 11 or 12 ounces. And folks, what I like about that is when I put that into a pocket holster by DeSantis, and I'm also going to put a link in the show notes to the DeSantis Nemesis pocket holster. DeSantis Nemesis pocket holster. You don't have to memorize that or write it down. There'll be a link in the show notes when you go to the website. It breaks up the outline of that little pistol, and that thing looks like a wallet in my pocket. It looks like my iPhone in my pocket. I mean, seriously, that you cannot tell. You simply cannot tell that I am carrying a gun when I have that 380 in there. And folks, you know, I mentioned this in one of my other shows. I'm tired of the caliber wars out there. I'm tired of somebody saying, oh, that 380, that's a wimpy little caliber. It's a wimpy thing. All right, you're not going to stop anybody with that. Really? I'll tell you what. With 7 rounds in my 380, you're going to have a bad day if I have to use that gun to defend myself. You know, if I dump that, if I empty that magazine plus the one in the chamber, if I hit you 7 rounds of Buffalo Bore 95 grain 380, you're not going to have a very fun day. Just trust me. And I practice and practice and practice and practice, and I practice being accurate and rapid fire and being accurate with that 380. Okay, look up Buffalo Bore 95 grain 380 and check out the ballistics on that. It's pretty good stuff. No, it's not ideal. There are more powerful calibers, sure, but let's not get too hung up on the caliber wars. But the pocket pistol. Here's the problem. Now, here's the negative with pocket carry. The negative with pocket carry is that it's a whole lot slower. Much slower draw. Okay? Now, one thing you can do to make it faster draw is develop good instincts. And when you instinctively think that you might be in danger, stick your hand in your pocket. I carry it in my right front pocket. When I instinctively think I'm in danger, I stick my hand in my right front pocket, and my hand is already over the pistol. And you know, you can't tell. It looks like I'm sticking my hand in my pocket. When the doorbell rings at my house, when the front doorbell rings, if I'm not expecting anybody to come over, I answer the door with my right hand in my pocket, resting over the grip of my 380. My draw becomes very fast now if I've already got my hand on the grip of the pistol. So it's a good case for keeping your hands in your pockets, at least your right hand. And it's very inconspicuous, okay? Which leads me into being covert. Let's talk about the difference a little bit more about covert. Wear clothing to make you look like you're the average Joe on the street. You know, right now it's August. I live in Texas. We still have a lot of 100-degree weather. I like to wear cargo shorts, a loose-fitting t-shirt, and flip-flops or tennis shoes. I fit in right along with everybody else with my cargo shorts, a loose-fitting t-shirt, and my tennis shoes. Or flip-flops. And I can have my 380 in the pocket or a Glock 19 under a Hawaiian shirt. And I always wear an undershirt. I wear a very lightweight tank top undershirt. Always, always, always. I don't care if it's 105 in Texas, I got my undershirt on. Okay? So I can even unbutton if I'm wearing a high Hawaiian style shirt. If it's not a windy day, I can even unbutton it. I went to dinner with a friend of mine the other night, and he had a vest on. He had a vest, but it wasn't a tactical vest. It was just kind of an ordinary looking vest, and it was a very inconspicuous vest. I liked it. And he had just a regular normal shirt on, and he had some jeans, and he just looked like, you know, normal person, and he had his big full-size 1911 hidden in a holster, and his vest was covering up his full-size 1911. Again, it wasn't a tactical vest, but being covertly dressed means that you blend in with everybody else, you look like everybody else, and your clothes are not screaming, "I have a gun!" That's what you don't want. You know, you don't want to give the bad guy the opportunity to blast you from across the parking lot because he can tell right away that you have a gun. So that's what being covert means. Or at least that's my humble opinion on what it means to be covert. So I actually wish that they would call our licenses covert carry license instead of concealed carry license, because that element of surprise when people think that you're just an average person and all of a sudden you produce a firearm to defend yourself is a big asset. Okay, I want to keep this show, I want to keep it under the time constraints that I set for myself. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I'm respectful of it. So I'm going to move into the shotgun segment right now and talk a little bit about shotguns. I know this is the Handgun World podcast. But every once in a while, we're going to deviate from handguns, and we're going to talk a little bit about shotguns, and then also a little bit about 22s, like I promised. But shotguns, often people are wondering, well, should I have a shotgun also? Yeah, sure, you should have a shotgun. I'm a big fan of handguns for even home defense, because it's a whole lot easier to maneuver in tight spaces inside the confines of your house with a handgun. But shotguns, ladies and gentlemen, there is, in my opinion, inside of 25 yards, there is nothing more powerful than double-aught buckshot coming out of a shotgun. It is devastating. It is absolutely devastating. You want to talk about one-shot stops? Probably more one-shot stops inside of 25 yards happen with a shotgun than any other self-defense weapon in the world. So yeah, and inside of your house, it's probably going to be less than 25 yards, unless you've got a really big house. Okay? Now, what kind of shotgun? Again, that's a question and that's a war that'll never be won. I have a Remington 870, Remington Model 870 pump shotgun. It's a Wingmaster. It's actually an excellent hunting gun. I bought a short barrel for it, and when it's at home, it's my self-defense gun, and then I can switch it out and put my hunting barrel on it and go duck hunting, dove hunting, whatever I want to do. Okay, Remington, Mossberg, Benelli, so on and so forth. Those major manufacturers, you really can't go wrong. I like pump guns, although those double-barrel coach guns, boy, those things are kind of appealing too. They really are. Nothing wrong with a double-barrel coach gun. You know what a coach gun is? A coach gun is one of those little short, double-barreled, side-by-side shotguns that they used to use in the old days to guard the stage coaches. I think that's why they're called a coach gun. Those are really appealing to me for home defense, and I'll tell you why. They're real short, real light, real handy. So they're real easy to move around inside your house with a little coach gun. Light, short, and quick. They point real well, too. Man, they point well. Next time you're in a gun shop that has a lot of shotguns, pick up a coach gun and make sure it's unloaded. Double and triple check. And just point it in a safe direction and just kind of shoulder that weapon, bring it up and look, you know, look over the top of it and just, you know, see how well that points. And then ask the gun salesperson to give you a pump shotgun and do the same thing with the pump and see which one points and which one you can shoulder up quicker. Those little coach guns are great. And the other thing I like about those coach guns is you can get those little Aguila mini shells. There's an ammunition manufacturer called Aguila, A-G-U-I-L-A. I'll put something in the show notes about those. Aguila mini shells are pretty cool, especially for practice. They're little inch-and-a-half shells. They're very low recoil. So for females and kids that are going to practice with a shotgun, they make excellent practice rounds. They're not bad for self-defense, but they're just excellent for practice, and you don't have to worry about them misfeeding or anything in a coach gun because you manually put the shells in there. So that's another reason why I like the coach guns, aside from the fact that they're handy. And also, I would recommend the double trigger coach guns. If you're going to get a side-by-side shotgun, get one with a double trigger. You can shoot real fast. You can get two shots off real fast. In fact, you can probably get two shots off faster with a double trigger shotgun than you could with a pump. I mean, there's no action to work. All you got to do is bang, pull one trigger, and bang, pull the next one real fast. Sometimes if you get the type of coach gun with two different chokes in it, what's really good about that is you've got two different chokes for two different distances. So if they're a little bit further away, you can use the barrel with the tighter choke, and if they're a little bit closer, then you can use the choke that's a little bit more wider, so you got a wider pattern. So that's what makes them handy as well. And folks, I tell you, especially if it's a 12-gauge, two shots with a 12-gauge, you hit somebody two times with a 12-gauge, and I would say there's probably a pretty good chance that the altercation is over. Okay? Also, they can be reloaded a lot quicker than you think. You need to watch some videos. I'll put a link to a video in the show notes. You'll see a guy that can reload a coach gun pretty quick. So don't rule those out as a shotgun for home defense as well, or just for general defense, just because they're handy. Let's talk a little bit about shotgun ammo. You know, you hear a lot about double-aught buck. There's nothing wrong with number four buck also. Number four buck gives you more pellets. Yeah, they're smaller, but you're probably going to hit the attacker with more pellets too. So even though the pellet size is smaller, more pellets are probably going to hit them because there are more pellets in that round. Nothing wrong with number four buck. Birdshot, yeah, that's a big question. If it's real large bird shot, if it's BB size or number two shot, something like that, yeah, that'll probably get the job done, especially inside your house. At least it's going to probably make them quit doing what they're doing, which is really what you want. My humble opinion, ideally, some number four buckshot or single-aught buck, you know, double-aught buck, great too. I like copper-plated buckshot. Whatever buckshot size you get, I like the copper-plated. It costs a little bit more, an extra $3 or $4 a box. Federal Ammunition makes a type of ammo called the copper-plated buckshot with With a flight control wad, and it's a special design that helps keep the pattern a little bit tighter for a little bit longer period of time. Now, you have to aim a shotgun. It's a big urban myth that all you got to do is point a shotgun in the general direction and all of a sudden your attacker just vaporizes into thin air. That doesn't happen, folks. You have to aim a shotgun. You may not have to be as precise as you would with a handgun or a rifle, but you got to aim it. And if you're at close distance, if you're 5 yards from someone, your shotgun pattern's probably not going to be more than about 3 inches. So, yeah, you got to aim it. You can miss with a shotgun, especially at real close ranges. And remember, adrenaline, stress, you're freaking out, you're scared. You're only going to be half as good as you are at the range. Same thing with a shotgun. But I like copper-plated buckshot. Lead buckshot isn't too bad. Now, here's where a pump shotgun is really a cool weapon, because you could have... Remember, for defense, folks, you don't need to have the plug in your shotgun. The plug that limits you to just 3 rounds when you're hunting, you can take that out for home defense. So if you have a 5-shot, 7-shot, 8-shot shotgun, you can have different types of ammo in there. You can have lead buckshot for close range. You can have copper-plated buckshot for a little bit longer range. So you can mix and match. You can have a slug in there. Shotgun slugs for home defense is probably really overkill, no pun intended. All right, slugs, I don't know, man, because I think over-penetration there's too much made of that, but, you know, shotgun slug, that's just way overdoing it. You know, over-penetration definitely is a problem with those. Save the slugs for, you know, shooting out to 40 or 50 yards or going hunting. You're probably not going to need them really too much for anything else unless you need to shoot through a car door. But also have some extra slugs handy. If you're in a self-defense situation, get one of those extra shell carriers that goes over the butt end of your shotgun, by the way. Now, if you have a Remington 870 or a Mossberg 500 type that's not a tactical shotgun with a folding stock or a telescoping stock, if you have just a regular stock on your shotgun, get one of those extra shell carriers that goes on the back of your shotgun and keep a couple extra slugs in there. Okay, it can't hurt. And that's what's nice about pumps, is you can mix and match. You can mix and match, too, with the double barrel side by side. You know, you could have some lead buckshot in one side and copper buckshot and different sizes of buckshot. But, again, you've only got two rounds. So the nice thing about having a 5 or a 7-round pump is that you can mix and match your ammo. And especially if it's a stink-hit-the-fan situation and you got to get out of Dodge, well, I guess then at that point it's nice to have a lot of rounds in your shotgun. As far as sights, a lot of people spend a lot of money on real super fancy sights. You know, rifled sights and ghost ring sights and stuff like that. Come on, folks. It's a shotgun. Okay? It's a shotgun. It's close range shooting. Typically, it's going to be inside of 15 yards. And you're going to have a pattern that's spreading out a couple of inches. I wouldn't waste your money and stuff on those fancy sights. I mean, it's not going to slow you down or be a disadvantage, but just use the bead sight. Just use that front bead that your shotgun came with. And just put the bead on the target and pull the trigger. Just make sure that you got the shotgun shouldered properly. Put the bead on the target. Pull the trigger. As long as you're aiming it properly, you're putting the bead on the target, the shotgun will take care of the rest. Okay? And as long as you've, you know, learned to try to reduce your stress a little bit, which is hard. That's real hard. Okay? But that's why I say you got to aim your shotgun. But I would, you know, like I said, the real super fancy sights, I don't know. Now, night sights are not a bad idea. There's a company called XS Sights, xssights.com. They make a front bead sight that glows in the dark. It's got tritium in it. It's a night sight. So it gives you a big green dot at night. And that, I like that. I'm in favor of that. And the nice thing about it is that it just glues right over the bead sight on your current shotgun that you have. So it's not much gunsmithing involved. In fact, you can probably easily put it on yourself. It just glues right over the bead sight that's on there on your shotgun already. But again, that gives you a good big green dot at night. So I like this. I'm a big fan of that. And then in the daytime, it's a big white dot. So again, makes it real easy to pick up that sight and get the bead on target. And that's pretty much all you need. I mean, tactical shotguns are cool. You know, the tactical feature is good. But remember, if you ever have to use a firearm in a self-defense situation, you are likely to end up in court. There's probably going to be an overzealous lawyer that is going to want to paint you out to be a killing freak and try to prosecute you. So if you've got a super cool military-style tactical shotgun, the jury is probably going to frown more upon that than if you pull out something that looks like a hunting gun and, by the way, I had to defend myself. It was my hunting gun and this intruder was coming in and he was trying to hurt me, so I had to get my duck hunting 12-gauge out and take care of the situation. A jury's probably going to be a little bit more friendly to that. You got to remember that stuff. I mean, you know, self-defense is more than just about shooting. It's about assessing your threat and knowing what threat is there and when to shoot and when not to shoot, and then what happens if you do have to shoot, what happens later. And that's another show that I'll talk about, or that I'll produce later. Okay, a little bit about 22s, just a few minutes, and then we'll wrap up this fourth episode. 22s are great. One of the things I like about 22s, the ammo is cheap. Get a 22, get a Ruger Mark III or a Browning Buck Mark, something like that. It's excellent practice. It's excellent shooting practice. For less than $20, you can get 550 rounds of 22, and you can get some good practice in. It just gives you good overall shooting practice. I wouldn't recommend a 22 for a self-defense carry pistol, but a lot of people have been stopped or killed with 22s. If you put the bullet where it's supposed to go, it's going to do its job no matter what caliber it is. And for someone who is not a real highly trained shooter or a new shooter, it's easier for them to shoot a 22. They can be more accurate with it because it doesn't recoil as much, and they can practice more, and it costs less. So, you know, there's an argument to be made for that. Another thing you might want to consider, if you already own a pistol like a Glock or a 1911-style pistol, there are what's called conversion kits. You can get a conversion kit, which basically is a barrel, slide, and recoil spring replacement. It just replaces the top portion of your gun and, of course, a different magazine. And it turns your Glock or your 1911 into a 22. The wonderful thing about that is you continue to shoot the style of gun that you own. Like, for example, my Glock 19. If I put a 22, if I put an Advantage Arms 22 conversion kit on that, I still have the feel and the trigger pull of my Glock 19. So it's like I'm practicing with my Glock in a lower recoil format. Same thing with your 1911. You can still practice drawing and depressing the thumb safety, and you still have the same sight picture and everything. So there's some real advantages to those conversion kits. And I have two Glocks, so I can keep my 22 conversion kit on one Glock and just keep the other one just regular the way it's supposed to be. And so now I've got a 9mm or a 22, and they're both Glocks. So that's what's really cool about the Advantage Arms conversion kits. Consider those as well, and it gives you the same low recoil, you know, cheap shooting and cheap practicing. Not to mention, folks, one of the best things about a 22 is the fun factor. I mean, they are just so much fun. For $40, you can take 1,000 rounds out to the range, and you and your buddies can just have a blast, no pun intended. It is just a lot of fun to shoot those. And when something is more fun, you keep on doing more of it. So you get more shooting practice in. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it? So that's all I wanted to cover. I wanted to keep this a relatively short show. I have some more thoughts on some of this stuff. I may put those into episode 5. But this is Bob Main, and this is the Handgun World podcast. Thank you for tuning in. And why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thank you for listening. Catch you next time.